Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery. We're excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts and boxing. Boy, it seems like we've said that maybe every other show during the 2023 calendar, maybe even going back to 2022 or before, between Jake Paul, Nate Diaz, Ben Askren, and now Francis Ngannou. So, yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it, man. It's huge. So, we'll talk about that. The big shakeup at UFC 295. Holy cow. John Jones injured. Tom Aspinall versus Sergey Pavlovich. They're booked for the interim title. Stipe Miocic out in the cold. Lots to discuss. All the latest news. We'll be right back to get started. What time did that shit go down, man? Was it like last night at midnight? It was late when Dana White had to hit that record button from his war room and tell us about the big shakeup. Luckily, he included a video with it. But yeah, John Jones, one of his, I wouldn't say final workouts, but I guess we're getting close. It was November 11th, right? He was wrestling or something. He tore his pectoral muscle. Dana White has already told us he'll probably be out 8 months. So he's definitely out of the fight versus Stipe Miocic. And they booked Tom Aspinall versus Sergey Pavlovich to dispute the interim title of the heavyweight division. Now, they're the co-main event, while Jiří Prochazka and Alex Fajeda are the main event, because that's for a vacant, undisputed title. So, Ghost, react. Tell me what you think. I guess one of the first questions that jumps out at me, where the hell's Miocic?
Mm-hmm. Man, there's so much to unpack. I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate we're not going to get this fight. It's unfortunate that we don't get to see John Jones, because this is a project that was years in the making. We finally got to see him. We only got to see him for seconds, you know? So this was going to be maybe a bigger glimpse into what he would be like as a heavyweight. And now we have to wait even longer. So that part sucks. It's unfortunate for John that that happened. It's kind of out of his control. If you watch the video, it's not like there's anything really crazy going on. It could just be that this is just an older dude that has put more mileage on his body, and he's a bigger guy now, you know, and maybe these things are just going to start to happen to him. But I think where it's really unfortunate is the Stipe Miocic side, because we haven't seen Stipe in forever. And when he is not training for a fight, I don't know that he's getting in the gym all the time. So I don't know what this does for him. I know the UFC wants to reschedule this fight, but I think in common sense would have said Stipe Miocic now stays on the card and just gets an opponent, whether that's Aspinall or Pavlovich, and the card just moves on. But he's not. You know, he's off the card too. And there's a lot of different ways of looking at this. I'm curious to see what you think about it, George, but I'll just give you my two cents. This is something that I've been championing for a long time. And I think this is a mistake that the UFC has made, in the sense that they've made it so that their belts no longer mean anything. And this is a perfect example. Because if you're Stipe Miocic, you should be shouting, I want my belt back. I don't care who I have to go through to get it. Because in winning the belt, that's where you make the most money. That's where you have the most prestige. But that's not the case. The case is, I don't really worry too much about the belt. I just want to fight John Jones. That's what's bigger to me. It shouldn't be like that in professional sports.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's something. I engaged in some conversation with some of the junkies on Instagram, Twitter, So my point there, it will be similar to what I tell you. Without knowing all the details. Oh, first, let me ask you. Did you hear that the UFC wants to rebook those two specifically?
Yeah.
Jones and Miocic?
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you hear that?
I thought I read it.
Oh, okay. Well, this is how I look at it. If Aspinall fights Pavlovich for the interim, usually the winner gets to unify with the undisputed. That's one thing. And luckily for that guy, he gets bonus points because he's technically a champion. So that's, I used to kind of shit on the interim title a little bit, but really it's a way for another guy to sneak in and make some good coin come fight time, because technically, again, they're a champ, so they get pay-per-view points. So with Aspinall and Pavlovich, you know, let's say Aspinall wins. He would now face Jones in 8 months when Jones is supposedly ready to come back, not Miocic. So that means Miocic's delay is even further. Which, was he going to retire anyway? Was this just a one and done? Was he going to come back for three fights? Who knows? But Miocic, as of today, is out 2 years and 2 1/3 years, something like that. Well, I said it wrong. 2 months and seven. Can you hang on a second?
Yeah, sure. Hang on. While George does that, it's just, you know, it's very unfortunate that we're even in this situation, but it's one that couldn't be avoided. You know, the injury just happens. It's going to happen more at this high level, but I'm curious the way John Jones bounces back from this. You know, we see a lot of these athletes towards the tail end of their career. This is something that really John hasn't had to deal with very much, and a torn pectoral muscle. I don't know. He's so elite that I just feel like anything that drops his step a little bit, because you gotta admit, like, towards the end of his career at light heavyweight, he seemed to kind of slow down a little bit. I'd argue that I think he was just a little bored and maybe didn't take training as serious. But you could tell he had maybe lost a little bit of a step. And it's not saying that he's not a great fighter or anything like that. You know, GSP kind of started to lose a step a little bit, and I think that's why he decided to walk away. But who knows how you bounce back from these types of injuries, right? Even Henry Cejudo, you could maybe say, man, is he the same Henry Cejudo that we're used to? This happens kind of all the way across the board. So we'll have to see how old John Jones comes back from that, because he's got all the money in the world. He probably doesn't have to do this. And it's at heavyweight where fighters just don't mess around. And the two guys that are fighting right here that George alluded to, Tom Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich, those guys ain't no joke. You know, that's the future of that division. Both guys seem to just be improving with every fight. These are scary, scary guys to fight for John Jones. And luckily, you know, he'll probably only have to end up fighting one, because it seems like he's kind of at the tail end of his career as well. But if he had to fight both, that would be rough, man. That would be rough, because I'm really high on both of these fighters. And I think this is where we're going to kind of figure out, when we hear people breaking down this fight between Aspinall and Pavlovich, it's about as close as it comes. I mean, if you look at the odds, it's like, it's right there, man. It's almost a pick 'em. I'm early lean Pavlovich in this one, but I think I'm going to stick with that. And I think I'm going to stick with that to the fight, but it's such a close fight. And I think John Jones would dodge a bullet and not having to face them both. But boy, if he ended his career fighting Stipe Miocic, taking out Stipe Miocic, and then taking out these two cats, whew, I don't know how you could ever argue that level of greatness, right? I mean, that's just something that even years from now would be very, very hard to replicate. Because at that point, you could say he did it in both divisions. Now, another thing, another little mini storyline that's going on outside of all of this, when you think about it, is Francis Ngannou too, right? He's got a fight this weekend, and it's in boxing, but who knows what happens in that, right? If he gets absolutely destroyed by Tyson Fury, does he come back as the same fighter when he decides to fight mixed martial arts over at the PFL? And even then, he's in the PFL. John Jones is in the UFC. Now, we've seen weirder things. I mean, talk about weird. Just think about what we're discussing this weekend, right? He's in a boxing match against one of the greatest boxers of all time in Tyson Fury in the heavyweight division. I guess if you can get that weird, then maybe you could ever get as weird as a UFC PFL thing to kind of decide who is top dog. I don't know. But John Jones, I'm pretty sure he's bouncing back from this, and I'm sure we're going to get one more out of him. But I don't know that we're going to get a lot more out of him. And that's a guy that I think the UFC is going to miss. Now, every time we say that, we tend to just forget, right? These guys just get replaced by that new crop of fighter, and here we go again. It's a new dance. You know, we're saying that about Pavlovich and Aspinall here in this situation. Those are two fighters that they're going to be around for a while, you know, and those are going to be the big names. And who knows what you get out of Pavlovich. You know, you had a guy like Fedor Emelianenko, who for so long just ran Pride. And the guy didn't speak a lick of English or Japanese, but we freaking loved him, right? Pavlovich is just, I find him to be charming. I think he's connecting a little bit with the fans, and I think Aspinall is as well. So, I mean, this is kind of the future of the heavyweight division. It's a really, really big fight. But overall, talk about, like, I don't know that I can remember a time. I know the UFC goes through these little periods where these types of fights just shit happens, right? One after another. But I can't remember it happening to this magnitude. Back to back like this, like holy crap. And when you think about it, like the fix it plan has been pretty money, right? What the UFC was able to deliver in the last card, and then their way of fixing things here, it's pretty legit. What happened to you?
Comment section.
Yeah. All right.
I had a medical emergency. Uh-oh. I apologize. Yeah.
You did, or someone else?
Huh?
You did or somebody else?
Me, yeah.
Oh,
all
right.
Okay, I will kind of, I think I remember where I left off. Mm-hmm. I was talking about Miocic. He hasn't fought in just under 3 years. It's like 2 years and 8 months, I think. So then this fight happens. And then the winner of Aspinall Pavlovich fights Jones. Dana White said 8 months. So 8 months would be, I believe, June. And then after that, Miocic would then come back, which would put him at just under 4 years. So is he retiring, waiting for Jones? What was going to happen anyway? Was he going to come, retire then? I mean, he's 41, mm-hmm. right? And he's been gone a long time. What if Jones versus Aspinall is a classic and they got to run it back? You know, I have to cover all the bases here. I know they say the same shit all the time. It's just kind of what happens. I don't know. I wonder what Miocic felt about declining the fight. He already had a camp, which means that costs money, you know, because you got to kind of pay your coaches and all that. He's not going to get paid in November, and usually the challenger makes 500 grand base. And then Miocic, because he's a former champ, I could see him getting some sort of a bonus, whether it's a small pay-per-view cut or something that would put him at least at $1 million. He's not getting that. So I don't know. I'm kind of tripping about that a little bit. You know, like what happened there? Now, did the UFC do a good job in putting the other two together? Sure. But I always felt like I wanted to see Miocic versus Jones, Aspinall versus Jones, and Pavlovich versus Jones. And probably, honestly, I thought Pavlovich deserved it the most, to be honest. But, mm-hmm. You know, we've gotten over that when they made this Miocic-Jones fight already. So, I don't know, man. I just don't know how to unpack all this. I'm really, really frustrated. I guess, at the turn of events. But again, the UFC with 2 weeks ago was dealt a shitty hand, and they came up with Aspinall versus Pavlich. I guess I'll take it. You know, I remember JDS and Kane. We wanted, you know, we wanted opponents for Brock, I think it was at the time. I can't remember. And they faced those two off, and we were like, oh, man, you're going to kill one of them off, you know. But
they waited a good time for that, I think.
They both wound up being champs. They both wound up having great careers, so it worked out. They had their trilogy. But in this case, you know, I don't know. Now, just because I brought it up, I do have some odds. Some odds have come out on that. Tom Aspinall is a slight favorite over Sergey Pavlovich. According to DraftKings, Aspinall's minus 130, so 130 to win 100. Pavlovich is 110 plus 110. 100 to win plus to win 110. So it's not much, right? But he is the favorite. So again, the winner will get pay-per-view points, and he'll get the inside track to face John Jones. Here's another thing, and this is me probably being a jerk. If you're a UFC nut hugger, you're not going to like what I have to say. And if you're a UFC hater, then you're probably going to be fist bumping me. But it's funny how, I mean, I guess the pectoral injury is probably not as serious as the labrum or the Achilles heel, but you notice when Prochaska got hurt, it's like, he vacated. That's it. We're moving on. We'll be ready for him when he comes back, which, to their credit, this is his main event coming up. And when what's-his-face towards the Achilles heel, Jamal Hill, he's out, vacated. But yeah, that's it. We move on, you know? And now with Jones, it was like, no. We'll hang on to Jones. He's going to stay champ. 8 months is the injury. And we got Aspinall versus Pavlovich. It's funny how he's kind of the big enough name where we're willing to preserve his little spot and go the interim route. Whereas with the other two, it was like, get the fuck out of the way. You know, we got to fill this vacancy, goddammit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Jamal kind of, I think he was the one that started that, right? That was kind of his move from what I heard.
Maybe. But I don't know that any champ's just willing to go take it. But I'm sure if they come to you, you might go, all right. I guess that's what happened to me, but.
Yeah,
I don't know that any champ picks up the phone and says, guess what? I tore my Achilles. It's going to be a year. Come on. You know, like Ferguson, he tore his ACL and he came back in 5 months. So did Jerry Rice. Those guys were incredible in their rehab. Jerry Rice, the football player, has been retired for a few years, in case if you're a young listener. But remarkable recovery time. So I don't know. That's just me making not a dumb point, but just an observation, you know, that maybe it was the difference of the Achilles and the torn labrum. I guess they are a little closer to you a year than the torn pectoral. Mm-hmm. But let's remember this. Let's remember when Jones comes back and see if it really is 8 months or if it'll be closer to a year. But, you know, the difference in the way that part was handled.
Well, I'm curious to see what exactly happens when he does come back. Because, you know, you were talking about like that best case scenario where we get to see him fight all of these guys. I don't think that's going to happen. I think John maybe has one more in him, two at the most, you know, and he kind of gets the luxury of not having to fight Pavlovich and Aspinall. You know, one of them's going to go and that's going to benefit him.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about how amazing it would be to go up another division, especially heavyweight. Right? So much weight. Beat Cyril gone. And then let's just say he would have fought Stipe and then beat the other two. Like, how do you even argue that? How do you argue this guy not being the greatest of all time if he pulled something off like that? And I can't even see anybody remotely getting close to dethroning that argument. I mean, we're gonna need a real special individual in mixed martial arts to ever do something like that. But I think John, if I had to guess, I think he's got one more in him, maybe two at the most. But he's getting older, and you know who knows how he bounces back from an injury like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, if Jones were to have beaten Miocic, that would be one title defense. Mm-hmm. And then let's just say he beats Pavlovich and Aspinall, then. Now he would equal, let me make sure here. I think Miocic had 4 title defenses. I apologize. For some reason, I thought he only had 3, but it looks like it was 4. Good night. And, but I don't know. Like you said, I don't know if Jones has enough in him to hang out that long. He's not an old heavyweight because he's only 36, right? Heavyweights fight into their 40s. We just finished saying Miocic is 41. But he's got wear and tear. He started young, and he's been in some big fights. But to answer your question, goes, if he somehow stuck around long enough to tie Miocic, he'd be the greatest heavyweight ever, unless you want to bring up the Fedor argument. I don't know. And he'd be the greatest light heavyweight ever. He's already kind of the greatest ever. But what he would do, goes, is he might put these records or this mythical figure of John Jones in some echelon that would be maybe untouchable for the next 25 years.
Right.
Like you said, somebody would have to come along, and no disrespect, I think it'd have to be like a women's featherweight, like a Cyborg kind of, who's just bigger than everyone else and a physical specimen, and there's just not enough great featherweights to challenge her and just thump them for 10 years straight to get to, you know, champion status, title defense status, and then find another weight class to duplicate it yet again. Maybe there'd have to be a fighter where that if they won three titles in three different weight classes, somehow stayed undefeated, didn't match in title defenses, or if they did take a loss, they avenged it, but you get the three weight classes, then maybe you can get in that conversation. But this guy, man, this is pretty special what he's done. Now, if Miocic smashed him or just beat him, I guess, then he'd kind of come back to the playing field with the others, you know, where they all, you know, a few guys won two titles, the title defenses were matched or whatever. He'd probably come back to GSP's world, I guess. But we're not there, you know. This is still a year away, if that. We wish him the best. I thought Francis Ngannou had a cool quote. He goes, "Hey, this is bad news." He goes, "We don't wish anyone to get injured." Mike Bond's out in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And he asked him that question. I thought he had a great answer to it because he posed the question as, "Hey, look, you know, if this was the situation you were in, I mean, how frustrated would you be having passed over a possible boxing match, the bag that comes with it, to fight John Jones, and then he gets hurt?" And of course, we don't know how the world writes itself or how things play out if, in fact, that happens, but Ngannou was classy, I guess, is the point. And it's complicated. It sucks. But I want to applaud the UFC for coming up with Aspinall versus Pavlovich on late notice. Sure. You know, it's a co-main event.
Yeah, no, I mean, they did their jobs there. And I do want to give props to Francis, because that's like what we're used to in other sports. You know, for those of you who are just mixed martial arts fans, maybe you won't get this. But in other sports, there is this kind of camaraderie, even though these guys are playing against each other every year. There's not that many feuds on a weekly basis. You know, usually people are happy for other players, and that's a great attitude to take, especially when you consider he's a guy that probably has the biggest chip on his shoulder, right? People are always coming at him, you know, saying he's not good enough, he's not this, he's not that. I mean, even John Jones has done it. So he had every right to maybe give some kind of snide comment, but he hung true to what he was saying and what he believes in, and that's great. And, you know, some people will probably say, "Well, I'd be like that too if I knew I was about to fight Tyson Fury coming up," you know, thinking maybe you could smile for about a week, you know, before people were making fun of you again. But we'll see. I don't know. That fight's coming up soon here.
It is October 28th, right? So we're just a few days away from Fury versus Ngannou. And since we've brought his name up, let's talk about that fight. By the way, I think I saw Fury at minus 1,500, Ngannou at plus 800. They're going 10 rounds, folks, usually with 10-ounce gloves. And Teddy Atlas kind of did an interesting breakdown of why he thought Ngannou has a better shot than people are giving him to. And now look, I'll preface this by saying, if my house depended on it, if my life depended on it, I mean, of course I'm going to take Tyson Fury. in a boxing match. Give me a break, right? No disrespect to Big Fran, Extreme, the guys. That's just the reality of it. These are two different sports, and that guy's a master of the sweet science, Tyson Fury. Fucking like 30-0-1 or something. I mean, he's a G, right? Mm-hmm. Proper boxing heavyweights who have dedicated their whole lives haven't been able to give this guy an L. But this is unlike Mayweather and McGregor in that they're heavier punchers, right? And I think Ngannou had a more formidable boxing background than McGregor. He actually came up through boxing, switched to MMA, and now he's back in boxing. Now his early boxing career wasn't this incredible record of 200 wins and no losses in amateurs, Olympics, nothing. Nothing like that. But it was his first love. He has some he had some fundamentals to go back to. And again, the puncher's chance. So what I am going to say, though, goes is after hearing from Teddy Atlas, and because of everything I just stated, I'm not giving this guy I'm not calling it 99.99 and, you know, Fury and Ngannou. It's just this wild haymaker. No, you know what? I'm going to give him a 5% chance, man, which isn't that much more, but still, I just think I'm going to give him a better chance than most. I don't know. I just, something in my stomach tells me that this might have a few moments, compelling moments. And then if Fury smashes him, he smashes him. But I just don't think it's going to be ridiculous like fucking Danis and Paul the other day.
You know, if, I don't know if you saw much of what they look like. Tyson looks a little flabby. He doesn't look the way he normally looks in a big fight. So, and granted, you know, he's not an Adonis, even if he's out there fighting Deontay Wilder or someone like that, right? He's not a cut-up heavyweight, but he just looks, he looked a little lazy, a little fat. I would, maybe 5-10 at the most, because really when you think about all of the things that need to happen for Francis to win the fight, it just really, really is a lot. You're hoping Tyson Fury has an off night, and you mix that with, you know, the unpredictability of an MMA fighter. Like, that's the thing, is Francis Ngannou is going to be wearing boxing gloves, but he still needs to go out there with a little bit of an MMA mentality in this fight, because I think that's confusing to a boxer. It's just a little strange. So I think that, you know, there's like, I'll give you an example. In baseball, there's certain pitchers who have come in and like their first couple years have given batters all kinds of fit. It's not that they throw the ball that much better. They don't throw it that much faster. Their location isn't that much greater. A lot of it comes down to their windup. You know, Hideo Nomo was one of those. The windup was what everybody got confused with and had problems hitting his pitches. You can do something similar here in boxing. You know, where the punches are being thrown from, the stances that they're coming from. That can be confusing for a boxer who's used to everybody else having somewhat a similar technique to them. I think that's what Francis has to use to his advantage. And the difference here is, you know, that could happen in Mayweather-McGregor, but McGregor doesn't carry the power that, you know, the heavyweights do. So if Francis does connect, like say with the uppercut that McGregor landed on Floyd, well, there's a lot more trouble behind that, right? For heavyweights. So that's what kind of makes things a little compelling. It'll be interesting, but realistically, behind a really good jab and counter punches, Tyson Fury should just have his way with Francis Ngannou.
You're right. He did look heavier, not only a month ago when they had the press conference, but even in watching him now, he still looks a little bit heavier. And Teddy Atlas made a couple of the points that you just brought up. One, did he really give the most honest camp? So are we seeing the best Tyson Fury? Or are we seeing maybe 75% of the Tyson Fury that we've seen in previous fights, or at his best, right? That's one thing. Two, the unorthodox punches that Francis is capable of throwing through his knowledge of the sweet science early on, the work he's probably put in the last 3 to 6 months, And then obviously what he's learned in MMA. I'm sure there might be a few things that just might be unexpected for Tyson Fury. So, you know, you put that all in a bottle, shake it up. I just think you have more than that 1% chance, maybe a 5, 10% chance, which again isn't enough to me to put my house on Ngannou. No, I think I even made a joke. If you put $25 on Ngannou and he wins 200. So guess what? I'm going to back the MMA guy, the Extreme Couture guy, with $25. And if he wins, $200. And guess what I'm going to do with that? I'll buy some Manchester United gear. Just like fellow Man United fan, Tyson Fury. So I just think that's the more funner route. And like I say, I think Fury's overlooking him. Fury's always been confident. He's been doing his interviews. I think he's always been confident, but, you know, what's weird about saying all this is this. I'm realistic, folks. I realize that just a week ago we were saying, do you think Alexander Volkanovski on 12 days traveling, you know, on away game, right, to Abu Dhabi has a chance when with a full camp in his home country of Australia, he wasn't able to beat him? I actually said that, right? Because the odds were stacked against him. And the odds are stacked against Francis Ngannou. But again, the dumb dude, I remember Randy Couture was slowly dismantling Brock Lesnar. He wasn't far into the dismantling, but he was just doing a few things. And then all of a sudden, Lesnar just landed one of them lunch pill hands that he has behind the ear. It just looked like a sloppy punch, but it landed behind the ear and it wobbled Randy, and that was the beginning of the end. And I'm not saying that Francis Ngannou maybe can't do something like that either.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. If you guys want information on it, it's this Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Remember, they're in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And you can order the pay-per-view on ESPN Plus just like you do your UFC pay-per-views, right? So 2 p.m. Eastern is 11 a.m. Pacific. Because of the time change, that's why it's an early afternoon affair. And there is no official belt because Fury is a world champion, but he's not putting up his belt for this fight. But they have created a special belt for this encounter. But it won't be the WEC heavyweight title that he holds. It's just 10 rounds, and that's it. And honestly, I think Fury's already got Alexander Usyk signed for, like, December. He's already looking ahead to his real boxing match, I guess. Who knows? But, I think this is a good one to roll the dice on, and if you have the extra money, grab it. I think that's what Goz and I are going to decide to do. Is grab it and just root on for the fellow extreme couture guy.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if anything, man, like, think about all the stupid things you've spent that kind of money on. This really is like a piece of history. You may never see something like this again. The top dog in MMA against the top dog in boxing. You definitely won't see it on our side. You know, you won't see the boxer come over. Canelo Alvarez is going to just all of a sudden jump into the cage. So. I think it's just, it'll be fun, man. It will.
And if you want to check out that article, again, it's in the prime spot. Danny Segura wrote it up. He took a listen to Teddy Atlas's podcast, and he had some nice details in it. Check it out. It's on the front page of MMAJunkie.com, as well as a nice compilation of Francis Ngannou's 10 Greatest Knockouts by Dan Tom. And we also have the number 19... 30 greatest fighter in the history of UFC compiled by the MMA Junkie staff. So check that out. Today we unleashed Max Holloway at number 19. And just to give you a quick recap, Dustin Poirier came in at number 30, Frank Shamrock number 29, Francis Ngannou number 28, Joanna Jacek number 27, Frankie Edgar number 26, Tito Ortiz number 25, Cain Velasquez, number 24. Dominic Cruz, number 23. Valentina Shevchenko, 22. Matt Hughes, 21. Ronda Rousey, 20. Max Holloway, 19. So we're in the teens now. And Goz, by the way, has compiled, I think, what is it, your 30 greatest dishes, Goz? Or you think the 30 greatest dishes that can be served on the planet? What are you doing right now?
I don't even really know. To me, it's the 30 greatest dishes of all time. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's a mixture of obviously foods that I think are great. And then some of them I don't think are like that great, but they're so popular that they have to be on the list, you know, certain. And I'll run through that really quick. So far,
what was your number? Yeah, run through it, I guess. I'm going to ask you what your number 19 is, but tell us what it is.
Number 30 is ropa vieja. It's a Cuban dish. Number 29. Huh?
Have you ever made it? Do you know how to make that?
I haven't made it in a really long time, but I have made it before. Okay. Chicken tikka masala. It's an Indian dish. It's number 29. Number 28, I had wings, chicken wings. The reason why I put it so high on Ronda Rousey? Well, that's why I have it up here, because to me, wings, sandwiches, and soups are going to be higher on this list because they're kind of like appetizers. You know, wings have kind of become more of a proper meal in the last couple years, but nobody really, they're not main eventing, right? Like, you're not full after one of these. So they come in at 28. 27 is a Thai dish, patsy u. Number 26 is fish and chips. The UK is represented. Number 25. Fish and
chips. Okay.
Ramen. Ramen's pretty legit. Number 24.
You mean that stuff the kids eat in college?
No, not top ramen. Like proper ramen. Okay. 24 is a lobster roll. 23, chicken parmesan. 22 is paella.
Goes.
Yeah.
I've been peeking and following along. I thought it was lobster bisque, or was it a lobster roll?
Lobster
bisque. Or is that the same thing?
Or sorry, lobster roll. And then now, so 20 was paella. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, 22 was paella. 21 was lobster bisque. And that was yesterday. And then today, number 20 was lomo saltado, which is a Peruvian dish. And that's where we're at.
How was that one received? Have people indulged in Peruvian cuisine? I know this has been mostly through the junkie staff, right? Or have you been putting it on other social media?
No, this is just a thing we've been doing on our little Slack channel. It was funny because the first three messages were kind of like, I've never even heard of this. It looks good, but I don't know what it is. And then Danny Segura came in with like a shotgun and just let people have it. Like, you got to get on this. And Simon as well, he's had Peruvian food, so he knew what it was all about.
All right. Well, I can't wait to hear from, we're at 19, right?
Tomorrow will be number 19, yeah.
Yeah, by the time we do the show on Monday or Sunday night, we'll probably be around the 15th, so you'll have four more to give us. Good stuff. All right. Let's continue on here with some news. Jake Paul says no boxing rematch against Nate Diaz. He says PFL has a fight offer on the table. The problem is, though, goes Diaz is kind of like, hey, I'm team UFC, and I ain't doing that. He wants to box again. And I think I know the genesis of this. I think Diaz realizes, holy cow, I could have beat this guy. But because he likes to clown around, and who knows if he gave the most honest camp, you know, he's in this predicament. But we know Jake Paul ain't going to the UFC. I mean, I guess he could talk to PFL and say, hey, would you let me go and represent PFL? But I just don't see that happening. And it doesn't look like Nate Diaz wants to do anything with the PFL, unless they can give him a lot of money and say, we won't tie you down other than for this one fight, and that'll be that. Who knows? But it's out there. Figured I'd talk about it. You interested at all?
You know, believe it or not, I don't know if interested is the word, but I would go for another round, because the way you summed it up was perfect. I feel like it was a lot closer than what I thought it was going to be. And I do feel like if maybe Nate Diaz took it a little bit more serious, we might have had a victory there for Team MMA. Now, that being said, a guy like Jake Paul is a guy that takes the sport serious. And I think he is relatively trying to get better every fight. And he's got father time on his side, right? Nate Diaz, every time he has one of these, I don't know how often he's in the gym preparing for this type of stuff. So who knows what a second fight would look like, but I would be pretty down with it. I think I'd order it.
Yeah. I guess I'd split it with you, cause I really don't want to just give him $80.
Right.
They're big names. It's fun to see one guy get his ass kicked. And in this case, I want Jake Paul to get his ass kicked. Although I am a Jake Paul fan. He kind of entertains me, to tell you the truth. He won me over. But I'm always team MMA. And I think him coming to MMA is a waste. Although it would be nice for an MMA guy to blast a boxer just to every once in a while get that pleasure. Mostly it's our guys going that way.
Do we really look for it, though? Like, wouldn't the boxing world go, that ain't our guy?
Some. I've seen a lot of fighters like Tyson and I think Teddy Atlas kind of give him his flowers because he actually put some money in pockets for like Amanda Serrano and a few other fighters by including them in their cards. And he brought eyeballs and he put in the work. I think boxers know that he's not a real boxer in the sense that he's not a world-class guy, but he does put in the work and go out there. Whereas, you know, there's some other boxing matches where it just looks like two guys with pillows just swinging at each other, you know, in a college dorm room, like the equivalent of. Whereas with Jake Paul, he surrounds himself with decent training partners, good coaches, and just gives it his best. But so I think there's a little bit of respect there. So I don't know. Maybe some guys might say, yeah, that's our guy, and others might turn their back. Who knows? Sean Strickland says, Hamzat Chimaev doesn't fucking deserve title shot after the Usman win. I kind of agree with him. You know, I was doing the rankings this week, and Chimaev goes, he only has won 4 fights as a middleweight. 2 of them are like over 3 years old, 2 of those wins. The most recent ones are one that fell into his lap when he didn't make weight, and Kevin Holland got switched to be his opponent, and it was at a catchweight of 180. So technically, it is a middleweight bout, but it wasn't booked as a middleweight bout. And both him and Holland are more renowned as welterweights, but that's one. And then the other one is him versus Usman. Again, 10, 12-day notice. Usman debuting as a middleweight. That's just not the resume, man, of a title challenger, you know? Now, I know Cannonier tore his MCL. Unfortunate, he's out of the fight with Roman Dolidze. And he's probably out of any fight at this point. But if Dricus Duplessis is ready to go, that's the guy that deserves it. Should be him versus Sean Strickland. And if Chimaev can maybe win one more, just go out there and beat one fucking real middleweight, dude. You know, a top guy. And then I'm all over it. I get it. I get it. Chimaev's a stud. I get it. I mean, but what's right is right.
Yeah, I think even for the UFC, that one might be a tough sell. Had he come in and if that fight ended in round one, with Kamaru Usman, the way it was going, maybe you could still sell that. You know, I could see everybody going, all right, look, man, we get it. The UFC's bad at Dricus. These guys stepped in. All right. But the way the fight played out, he really just didn't do himself any favors. And honestly, George, I just feel like one more fight ain't going to hurt him. You know, he's got to solve the cardio issues. He's got to figure that out.
A fight night. Go 5 rounds with someone on a fight night. Train for that and see how that goes. And tick that box. And I now that you remind me, I'm still tripping how the UFC's tripping on Dricus. Hey, you just won against the former champion, cleaned his clock. We brought in Izzy, who really put him in an uncomfortable spot to build a fight. Okay, Dricus hung in there with him and then just turned his back. But there was really no discussion like, it, by the way, it's you flying to Australia or anything. I think we were all thinking Whitaker was going to win. But that's not easy, man, to win on July 10th, that was, or 8th. You know, win, decompress, fly to South Africa, which I think it goes like 5 hours to Atlanta and then like 12 to South Africa. All those jet lag and the time difference, right? And then you do a camp, and then somehow on September, what was it they fought? September 10th? Now you got to fly to Australia and fight there. I mean, you're not even giving him that guy the actual 2 months for the biggest fight of his life. And why are you just all of a sudden not believing him when you believe other people have injuries and can't go or whatever? this guy, you know, says his foot is hurt or whatever. I don't know. Like, the UFC's lucky in that the pace that they keep, some of these stories just get buried. But then all of a sudden, when they get back brought up, you know, I'm like, God damn, I remember all that bullshit. Like, I thought DDP kind of got shafted there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Totally did. But, you know, that's just something the UFC does, man.
I mean, think about it. Why aren't they mad at that Chimaev who didn't make weight and caused all that little, remember that switcheroo with, who was it? Li Jing Liang, Daniel Rodriguez, Tony Ferguson. I mean, that was a whole mess too, caused by Hamzat Chimaev. Where's his doghouse? You know, I guess maybe he was in the doghouse for the last few months. He didn't fight for over a year.
He's younger. But he's more marketable. That's just all that matters to him.
Brutal, man. Brutal how the UFC can act the way they do. What we don't know, and I'll always give them this, is how them phone calls go. I wish they would release transcripts sometimes, because if DDP was a little twat and says, well, okay, you really want me to go around the world, pay me $5 million, you know, or just something ridiculous, then I guess you start to side maybe with the promotion. Who knows how those conversations go? But on paper, I just see a guy that had less than 2 months. And if he couldn't go, he couldn't go. You've taken other guys at their word when they can't go. Why punish this guy? But that should be the fight. Chimaev should take another one. I think it would be good for Chimaev as well. He just isn't a strong fighter after a round and a half. It would serve him well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there's some other news to discuss. Volkanovski says, I will fight in January against Ilya Topuria. I mean, look, I can appreciate the way he wants to keep a high pace, a high volume of fights, you know, every year that he's basically at the top. I really can't appreciate it. I'm a Volkanovski fan, but I don't know, man. You know, that was quite a shin he took to the head. You know, he needs to listen to his own advice. It's almost like he was talking to himself at the press conference, realizing that emotional Alex Volkanovski went for the gold, right, and the glory, and it blew up in his face. But, you know, he just decided to pull the trigger. And here he has a chance to maybe learn from that mistake and just space it out and give himself maybe another couple months to really properly recover from this KO, rest through the holidays, and then come back like a lion against Topuria. You know, just delay it 2 months, fight in March in Vegas or something.
It's funny you bring that up, because often, a little peek behind the curtain, for those of you who don't know, George and I are brothers, and when we battle with our 80-year-old mother, the one line that's kind of almost the crane kick, because it can't be defended, is when she's trying to not act her age, we tell her, well, what would you tell your mom, you know, if you were in our situation? And she kind of says, all right, I get it. You almost want to throw that line back at Alexander Volkanovski, a guy who was a coach on The Ultimate Fighter, right? He had a lot of people that needed to look up to him for advice and words of wisdom. You would almost say, well, what would you tell the other fighters that would be in this situation? Would you tell them, go out there and get a fight as soon as you can? Or would you tell them to rest the brain, right? That is probably something. Now, look, you don't want to take our advice. I get it. You know, maybe I understand that point of view. But look, a guy who might be the GOAT in combat sports, Henry Cejudo, he just said pretty much the same thing, man. You just got to sit back and really focus on resting that brain. I just don't get it. I understand where he's coming from. But at some point, somebody needs to save you from yourself. I don't want him to go through a sharp decline like that, you know, and that could definitely happen. Back-to-back losses, even knockout losses. A guy like Topuria, who really just, he swings for the fences, but he's calculated with the way he does it. That's a dangerous opponent, man. You got to take that guy serious.
I agree. And we're not asking for much, but it just seems like January is such a rush, man. It would be under 3 months, which, again, is way better than 10 or 12 days. It would be at his weight class, but he is coming off a KO and more than likely a concussion. I don't know to what degree. I don't know to what severity. I don't know about headaches. I don't know about that. But all I know is that when you get clipped like that, you know, it's not easy. Again, here's the other side. The other side will be, well, how about Alex Fajeda? He got knocked out by, who was it? Israel Adesanya in April. And then he nutted up and fought Jan Blachowicz, I think it was in August. And he won. You know, he won a split decision. And now he's in a position to fight Jiří Procházka for yet another title because he did gamble on himself. Sure, there's always good sides. There's always other sides to the argument. We present them. You guys decide as an audience what you like. But I just think history shows there's more on the side of resting a little bit more and then coming back at closer to 100% versus the rush job is all we're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a brutal sport. Things can change just like that overnight. And it's not to say that we don't think Alexander Volkanovski can't just walk in there and do what he always does. Like, yeah, of course, that's a possibility. You could definitely do that. But you don't have to do that tomorrow. You know, you have the liberty. You just did the UFC a big favor. You have the liberty of maybe stretching this out a little bit. I think it's to your advantage. If I were in Ilia Topuria's camp, hearing those words from him would be music to my ears. Hell yeah. We got him off another camp. I mean, granted, it wasn't really a camp, but he still went through something. He went through a weight cut, and he got KO'd, and he's willing to just jump right into the fire again. That's great news for Ilia Topuria.
Yeah, indeed. And in fact, I wonder if Israel Adesanya could big brother him, put his arm around him, and go, hey, listen, this is the deal. Because Israel Adesanya has kept up a high pace of fights, high volume of fights in the last few years. And against Sean Strickland, it just looked like he hit a wall. I don't want to take anything away from Strickland. He rose up to the occasion. He smashed him. He knocked him down, everything. So no one's claiming that. But there is just something to say for eventually, you know, you are mentally fatigued, physically fatigued, and if things don't go your way early on in the fight, you might just break in a way. And I think that's what happened to Israel Adesanya. And like you said, there could be a sharp decline. You know, Israel now is saying, I'm going to take a lot of time off, then come back. But he was so confident going into that Strickland fight, and he got waxed. I mean, it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that plays out. And let me now pivot to Islam Makhachev, the server of that concussion of Alex Volkanovski. Daniel Cormier came out and said he's now the number one fighter in MMA. Well, I happened to do the rankings for this past week, and I moved Makhachev from number 6 to number 2. I couldn't put him past Jones. Look, guys, I got, you know, them Russians coming at you hard, right? And YouTube was not as friendly during spinning backclick, some of the comments. I guess I might have misspoken and said Islam Makhachev doesn't fight very often, and they correctly pointed out that he's fought twice in 23, twice in 22, three times in 21, which is not bad. 7 fights in 3 years. I get it. I think I may have rephrased. I should have said something else. What Makhachev hasn't done is fought the highest caliber of athletes in his own weight class. 4 of his last fights are a featherweight twice, and Bobby Green and Dan Hooker, who are not top 10 fighters. His only top 10, top 5 win is Charles Oliveira. And yet some people are putting him in the same sentence as Habib. Some people want him ahead of Jones. Some people are saying he's headed for the greatest fighter of all time. Tap the fucking brakes, everybody. We did it with Usman. We did it with Woodley. Adesanya a little bit. I'm sick and tired of people jumping the gun. You don't have to match them. All right? It's tougher nowadays. Your 9 title defenses might be better than someone who did it years ago, 20 years ago, and had 11. I get it. But this guy's only had 2 title defenses against the same guy. One guy on 10, 12 days notice, and he was a featherweight. Right? Now, I also said that as good as Volkanovski fought the other day, he almost looked like he was the second best lightweight in the world. Not the other day, back in February, which he fought great against Makhachev. He almost pulled it out, right? But still, that's just one matchup. Style matchups are different. We don't know how he would do against Gamrot. We don't know how he would do against Gaethje. You know, I get it. He's a Dagestani fighter, and the previous Dagestani fighter went through Poirier, went through Gaethje, went through, you know, some other fighters. But this is a different Dagestani fighter. We don't know how he would do against these guys. I'd like to see it, but that's the way it works. You got to start with your own division first. He's yet to beat a top 5 guy other than Oliveira. And his next guy might even be Oliveira. So it would be his last four fights, Oliveira, Volk, Volk, Oliveira. Throw in Green and Hooker. And like I say, there's just not this huge, huge resume built up. But that said, I moved him to number two. So I slightly disagree with Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, no, I like what you said as far as, you know, tap the brakes. Maybe even slam on it. I don't even see any reason. You have to understand what Khabib was and what he did, and staying undefeated was pretty damn amazing. And what helped was just him going through the best guys that were available at the time. And we just don't have that yet. Nobody's saying he's not going to get there. In fact, we all kind of feel he will. Well, we've all been very supportive of that. It's just not there just now, not right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I like to see Gagey because he's fresh. Let Oliveira take someone else. And if Oliveira wins, you got your rematch. I like to see Gagey. Oliveira, if he wins, okay, I'll see the rematch. And then whoever the next young stallion is that's coming through, whether that's Gamrot or anyone else, okay. And then once we get there, sure, you know, now we'll be at the fourth title defense, and it may be time to say Makhachev might be the greatest lightweight of all time. I don't know. He still has the one loss. Habib never lost. But he would have one more title defense. But we got a few more fights to go to get to that. And, hey, being number two to John Jones isn't the end of the world. I mean, that guy's a stud too, man.
Yeah.
Let's close with this. Dana White, he did an interview with Sports Illustrated. Somehow these words came out of his mouth. He was talking about Vince McMahon, and he says, you know, my history with Vince isn't a good one. He tried to fuck me so many times for no reason whatsoever, except to just fuck me. So he said a few things like that. But he says now that they're under the same umbrella, and he's had TKO, it's called, right? UFC and the WWE merger. He's had about 20 conversations picking his brain. And he went so far as to say that the guy is a savage. He's a killer. And even though there's a little bit of a past, he loves the guy. He's the Michael Jordan of the business world. And I knew a line like that could be picked up. And all I thought was, oh, man, for such a seasoned speaker, what was he thinking on that one? I mean, yeah, of course McMahon did something pretty great in pro wrestling. Definitely a legend of combat sports or whatever. But has he never heard of Jeff Bezos and what Amazon's done, or Bill Gates, you know, and all the other incredible billionaires out there who have just built massive businesses? You know, Michael Jordan, if you're going to be the Michael Jordan of something, I mean, you kind of have to be a clear-cut number one out there, you know, and in the business world. Give me a break. I don't know why he said that.
Yeah, he probably misspoke with that one. You know, it's actually interesting what's going on in the pro wrestling world right now is old Jordan there got put on the bench. You know, that this is the worst case scenario for Vince McMahon right now. He got taken off of creative control. So it's kind of like he's being taken out to pasture at this point. But, I'd even argue, like, don't get me wrong, what Vince McMahon has done has been pretty tremendous. And when you think about how long he's been doing it, a lot of people look at Vince McMahon and they forget that, like, there were years where he wasn't on camera. There were years where he was just behind the scenes. And there were years where he was actually the announcer. You know, so like he has been doing this for a very, very long time, keeping a business afloat like that. I mean, honestly, he inherited a lot from his father, but you have to give him his props for creating WrestleMania and all that and taking things to the next level. But I'd almost argue that Dana White has done just as crazy in a short amount of time building an empire as well. So, it's cool that he looks up to Vince in that sense, but hell, what old Dana's done has been pretty damn impressive as well.
Dana White's the Michael Jordan of MMA promotion,
mm-hmm.
and Vince McMahon's the Michael Jordan of pro wrestling promotion. But yeah, they're not, neither one's the Michael Jordan of the business world. I'm just one of them geeks that checks out the top 400 on Forbes, you know, and then you just see what some people have been able to do. What was that guy's name? Tim Cook from Apple and Bill Gates from Microsoft. And
I mean,
but I would challenge that the guy that created Uber, the guy that created fucking, I don't know, Samsung, or, you know, they're way in the hell ahead of Vince McMahon when it comes to business.
I mean, even if you narrow it down to sports, right? Like, look at Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson won a basketball championship. He's part of a baseball World Series championship. And now he's in the NFL. Like, that's pretty freaking amazing to own three teams in your lifetime, not to mention all the businesses on the side. Look at a guy like Shaq O'Neal and all the businesses that guy owns. Like, even if you limit it to sports, there's so many people that are involved. You know how many owners there are now that own multiple teams, like Premier League teams and NBA teams and pro football teams? It's like, it's out of this world.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it just cracked me up. It's just a chance to poke needles at Dana. He likes to poke fun at people, so why not let he can take a few every once in a while. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Thanks so much for always tuning in. Don't forget, Goz and I do spinning backlinks on Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Myself, Goz, and a couple of our colleagues, we get together and discuss all the latest news in mixed martial arts. It's a live show that can be seen on YouTube or Facebook. And you can go to the website and pick it up there. You can go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo, and it's there. Or you can go to our Facebook page, the official Junkie page, which has like a million followers. So if you find it on Facebook, it's got a million followers. That's us. You can go there, participate, check out the chat room, all that good stuff. And yeah, you know, we'll be tuning in, watching the Fury and Ngannou fight on Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. They're in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. So that's why the time difference. I think they're 10 hours ahead. Mike Bond's out there covering that. He has some great interviews and some great pre-fight coverage of that huge event. He went straight from Abu Dhabi to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and he caught up with both Fury and Ngannou today. So check that out. And I guess that's pretty much it for this week. So we'll see you all on Monday for the next Junkie Radio show. And go out, be a champion. That's what I tell people all the time. Take care and enjoy your weekend. We'll see you.